Rolling.
What's up, y'all? My name is Ian Edwards. Welcome to the Soccer Comic Rant. And we got a bunch of winners on the podcast today. Everybody should be happy. Finally, we're all on the same page. But before we get into stuff, I want to bring up a sponsor, OnTheVolleyApparel.com. If you go to OnTheVolleyApparel.com and you'll go there and you see tanks, tank tops, hoodies, sweatshirts, hoodies with Hip Hop Soccer logos on the front. They're dope. They have them there for men and for women. If you use my promo code ComicRant, you can get 20% off. So go to OnTheVolleyApparel.com and hook yourself up with some dope soccer gear. And they can also outfit your local soccer team. So use my promo code one more time, ComicRant. And this podcast, if you're watching it, you're watching it on YouTube at Ian Edwards or Ian Soccer Comic Rant Edwards. Like and subscribe. Press the like button so that more people will be able to see the podcast and see me beat down these dudes and trash their teams and vice versa, because they're going to come back. And we have just a very interesting, lively soccer conversation every week. So do that. And if you're listening or if you're watching and you didn't know you could listen, you can listen on iTunes and Omni Studio. So go there and at allthingscomedy.com. And allthingscomedy.com is a podcast platform with some of the best comics in the country that have their own podcast there. Bobby Lee has Tiger Belly there. Bill Burr has his Monday podcast there. He also has another one with Bert Kreischer. And there's Tom Popper, and the list goes on. It's an incredible list of free listening on that platform. So check it out. And thank you for our producer, Aaron Brungard, for hooking this all up. And fellas, let's go. Today on the show, we got Neil Chakravarti, comic, lives in San Diego by way of India, and Chelsea fan. What up, Neil? Congratulations on the win. Martin, haven't been able to say this to you for a long time. He's an actor and comic. I haven't been able to say this in ages. Congratulations on your win. And Lee, man, it's been almost the entire 2021 that I haven't been able to say to you, congratulations on your Southampton win. And Lee's a comic. He's wearing a shirt proud. He wore it when Man United beat them 9-0. And he's wearing it now that they beat lowly Sheffield 2-0.
We had to win this one.
You had to win that one, yeah. But like the most important thing to talk about right now, football wise, Lee, what's your take on the Meghan and Harry Oprah interview? What's going on in here in England? What's the deal?
I mean, like, people here, like, it depends who you talk to. Some people are like, you know, some people are like defending the Queen and the Crown and all this other stuff. They're getting really nationalistic about it. Uh-huh. But like, they didn't even really attack the Queen. They sort of just said they've been treated badly by other people. So, and, you know, I mean, I've got full sympathy for all the claims they've made. It sounds like they've had it as rough as you can get when you're royalty. So yeah, I'm on their side, but I mean, it's other people's business. I don't really care.
Right. I mean, logic wise, just my two cents on it. You don't give up the crown and all that comes with it. Like all the trappings, unless you're having a shitty time. So yeah. People can be like, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. But why would you give up something that's looked at as so great if it's going right? So is
living in Santa Barbara worth losing all that for? I don't know. Yes. I've not been.
Yeah, Santa Barbara's really nice.
Expensive, and very expensive. My friend lives there. Yeah.
Well, there you go. Really they nice. Thought, you know, they saw the gray clouds and the rain and went, you know, we need to get to California. So how can we engineer a way out of this?
I have a Polish friend that married into a family living in Santa Barbara and moved there. So he did fine in life.
All right. And Neil, I think he's frozen, but he put some funny stuff up. I can hear you, but your
video is frozen again.
Yeah, yeah. But I will say that.
The Megan stuff, the royal family stuff.
Yeah, wait until you fix your video and then jump in. Okay. I'll just talk since people can see my video.
Sure.
Since my video is fluid. I would say that's the closest. Watching that interview is the closest I've ever come to watching the crown. You know what I mean? And I feel like also watching that interview with like that's the real Bridgerton, and Oprah is the real Lady Whistle Down, and Martin has no idea what those references mean. But no. Hey, man, watch your Netflix. Neil, you there? Nope, he's not there. All right. So we're going to start with the second series set of business. Manchester Derby. Guys, thoughts? Martin, got anything to say? Because you sent me stats saying, you know, you sent me the list of teams at the top six that Man U have not beat and the teams that... that Bruno Fernandes have not scored against. You sent that to me weeks ago.
I don't think it was anything about Bruno Fernandes for me. Definitely the list of teams that you haven't beaten from top five. I think you haven't beaten one team up till this point. And well, listen, it's a great win. And for whatever reason, I think Man U is actually playing City pretty well in those derby games lately in the last couple of years. You know, like the end game is still. In my opinion, finished. City will win the title. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But for finishing second, for you guys, that was a very, very important win. And also moving forward, you know, you play well against City. And if you will be the contender next year for the title, Martin, that helps.
Mm-hmm. Martin, we're second. We play well against a lot of teams. All right.
No. But against City. Like against City, you do play well.
Yeah.
Martin, not against Tottenham, but against City. You play.
Yeah, you won a game. You won a game, and you're not even in the Europa League spot. All right.
We are. Now we are.
No, you're seventh. West Ham.
Oh, seventh. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. You're seventh. I don't know if you know. Listen, I get it. You're not used to being in the top, so you don't know exactly where the Europa League spots. But let me assure you, from somebody who roots for a team with experience, you're not. You're not in the Europa League. All right.
I mean, we are in this Europa League this year. We are.
I mean, if that floats your boat, man, hey.
And we're going to win it.
Yeah. Okay. You got a chance to win it. 100%. You got a chance to win it. Lee, what'd you think of the Manchester Derby, bro?
It's a good watch. I thought you guys played it quite smart in terms of, like, there were moments when you went and pressed them, which I think they didn't enjoy. And then there were other times when you soaked up their pressure and then used the pace on the counter to try and get at them. It was really good. Obviously, former Southampton Academy player, it was good to see Luke Shaw have probably the best game he's had in a United shirt, maybe. That second goal was just really good from him, really direct, really aggressive, just wanting to get into the area, making that run forward. And Martial woke up for you guys as well. I think he's been quite disappointing every time I've watched him in the last few weeks, but he looked like he cared this week.
Yeah. And Neil, come on, bring the praise. Talk about us.
I feel like this is the game that Solskjaer, I guess when he, you know, sits with his whiteboard and he tries to draw up his tactics. And
come on.
I feel like this is the game that he wants
Neil,
to play.
You know,
play
this is bad
time.
When Martin is defending Man
U. It's technically not that important of a game.
No, but the funny thing is like that I just mentioned that Solskjaer has something to do with tactics, and Martin completely cracked up. He's like, no, I'm not having this.
Right.
But I feel like this is the kind of game he wants to play. But what we often see is that even though you set up to play on the counter rarely comes. But a game like, you know, that we saw over the weekend is, I think, the ideal Manchester United under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer game where you are trying to do things, you know, in a compact way defensively, but you're not just like giving up on the attacking phase. and you're using the pace of your front four to cause threats pretty much throughout the game. It's not just like waiting till the 70th minute to do stuff. So I feel like a game like this, maybe it helped the fact that this is Manchester City, and if you stay boxed in all the time, they will get a few in. But I feel like this game is something that really the team and the coach can build upon and have a template of like winning game after game. Because I mean, this season, I guess with the draw versus Chelsea and the win now, you guys are pretty much secure in the top four. So now looking forward to next season, this is a really positive sign.
Let me say my first things about like my own team, and then you could jump in. I hope you remember what you're going to say. I don't know if you noticed, it was going like, your turn, Lee, Neil. It's weird that I have to explain this whole system to you. But let me just say something. So I'm going to read something off to you. All right? Kyle Walker, Sergio Aguero, Zach Steffen, Emerick Laporte, Bernardo Silva, Ferran Torres, Benjamin Mendy, Fernandinho, Phil Foden. That was the bench. And I'm going to read our starters off. Our starters were Martial, Bruno Fernandes, Marcus Rashford, Dan James, Scott McTominay, Fred, Luke Shaw, Maguire, Lindelof, Wan-Bissaka, Dean Henderson. So I just read off a bench that was better than our starters overall. So I'm not even going to read the starters that we had to play to beat them. So we faced a team that had that was full strength. They had all their depth. And a lot of people say, there's a few things they say, and they kind of contradict themselves. So they say, Man United has no set style. Then they say, Solskjaer is a PE teacher, right? Then, and he can't coach. And then we beat, so we don't have a set style, right? Which means we change up how we're going to play every week. So how can a PE teacher adjust his team tactically every week and be second in the table and be a PE teacher? It's just weird that people say a guy whose team has no set style, but adjust to each game, his team, according to each team that he's playing. And whether you like the playing style, or I think everybody should recognize that Man United is not a complete article. We're building towards something. And like Neil said, next season, if we don't win the league or win some shit, I'll have a problem.
League? You have to win the league. I mean,
yeah, we have to win the league. We have to win the league next year.
At least come very close.
No, not come very close. You know who comes very close? Guy who tries to date the girl you end up marrying. He gets close. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, it matters who wins.
In my world, the guy who ends up marrying the girl is the loser. But anyway. But I guess my point is, stop calling this guy a PE teacher. And it's just ridiculous. And great win by Manchester United. Luke Shaw off the fucking charts. Took out the entire Man City team. And I just love the way we started. Like, Man United has a problem of starting really slow and score first. But the way Solskjaer set up the team tactically, you have no chance. You have no choice if you're Man United but to start fast. Because the tactic was, we're going to press. So if they have the ball, we have to press, which automatically activates the entire team, which cuts out the chance of us starting slow. And then I love that Solskjaer recognized that the last time we played Man City, I think it was in an FA Cup semifinal or a League Cup semifinal, we left a lot of space because our defense was too low. So he took the chance of playing a high line with Maguire and Lindelof, and it paid off. And he squeezed them. There was no space. And they had most of the possession, but we pressed the shit out of them. They were uncomfortable, and we took the ball back. And we used all the defensive stuff that we've been doing all year to cover us. And Henderson did his thing. Great pass to Shaw. And Martin, what do you have to say?
Okay, it's going to be like one of my favorite dishes, sweet and sour at the same time.
I think it's going to be more sour, but go ahead.
No. I'll start with the sweet one. Solskjaer already accomplished something that wasn't accomplished by Frank Lampard at Chelsea, Freddie Ljungberg at Arsenal, Tim Sherwood at Tottenham, being the homegrown sort of interim coach. Some of them were short-lived, some of them a little bit longer, but none of them really survived. He survived. He survived quite a bit right now. So he's in a good position to continue to work, and that's already a big accomplishment. The way he sets up against certain opponents is very good. I would say the one thing he needs to improve is Man U is still struggling to beat very defensive teams, which resulted, for example, in you guys losing to Sheffield United, getting a draw against West Brom. You know, that's something to work on. If he can work on that, then you guys will be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. There's one more Man United-related thing that I want to bring up, and it's why De Gea didn't start. So De Gea, right, his wife was having a baby. And Solskjaer told him, go to your wife. She wanted to have the baby in Spain, so he went. And he also told De Gea, take as much time as you need.
Which don't come back.
Is basically the kiss of death. Like he might as well have Fredo'd him right on the lips in Cuba, like when he said that. And I just want, I don't know if De Gea is going to ever hear this podcast, but I'm going to tell you the story of Tiffany Haddish. Like, a few years ago, nobody ever heard of Tiffany Haddish. I used to see her every day at the Laugh Factory. And there was another comic. His name was Gerard Carmichael. And Gerard Carmichael came up the ranks fast, and he got his own TV show. And he needed someone to play his brother's girlfriend or wife on a TV show. So he auditioned a bunch of actresses, and he found one. And she lived in New York. And the month before they shot the pilot, this young actress was already booked on a play. So she told Gerard, hey, I'll come in the week of the pilot, but I can't come in the 3 weeks before the week of the pilot. So Gerard needed someone to fill in for her as him and the crew and the actors prepared to build their chemistry before the week of shooting the pilot. That actress, her name was Tiffany Haddish. So Tiffany Haddish was on set on the Carmichael show for 3 weeks playing in place of this girl who booked the role. And the week of shooting, the girl gets there and she does a rehearsal with the crew and the cast. And it's not as good as Tiffany had been doing with the crew for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I saw Gerard at the Laugh Factory, and I was like, and I had a feeling this would happen. You know, you give somebody with skill a chance, they will take that fucking chance because they know they may never get another motherfucking chance again. And if you're a football player, an actor, or whatever you're in, you do not let the person who wants your job get a motherfucking chance, or all you'll ever do is end up watching that person dance to the top with your chance. So that week, when that girl came, and she tried to fill in her role that she booked, Gerard knew that this role belonged to Tiffany Haddish and not this girl anymore. And I say this girl because nobody ever remembers her name. But you know whose name you fucking remember? Tiffany Haddish. So David De Gea, get your ass back to Manchester. And don't let Tiffany Henderson Haddish take your fucking job. That's all I got to say about that.
I guess luckily for De Gea in this case that he's already been a Tiffany Haddish in a different era. So mm-hmm. he's done his thing. So he can, I don't think it.
Really, no, he's more like really Tiffany him. Spanish, not Haddish.
Tiffany Spanish, hilarious.
Tiffany Spanish.
That's funny. But I hear what you're saying, Neil. But, I look on the BBC today and there's rumors that that Manchester United are looking for a buyer for De Gea. And right. I don't know if you heard anything about that, Lee, but that's on the BBC, football site. So, I listen, it's whenever a coach is telling you, go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'll find buyer. I mean, he's not Kepa. I mean, De Gea is De Gea. It's a brand. He's been one of the best keepers in the world
for
a long time,
I guess it's just his wages, though. 350K, there's not a lot of clubs which will buy a keeper for that amount of wages. I mean, if you can afford that
much. Real Madrid were keen for a while, but then obviously since Courtois came in, they've not had any need.
Yeah, our fax machine was working at that point.
Still a good keeper,
Still a good keeper. What are you going to say?
The one place I could see him going is... I think if Oblak leaves Atletico, which could happen because I think he's due a move probably in the next season or so. Mm-hmm. I think he could have a reunion back at his original club.
What's his original club?
Atletico.
Where he started at, yeah.
Would you take him for McCarthy to Southampton?
I'd take him. He's better than any of our keepers, in my opinion.
Who?
Our keepers are good, but they're good mid-level goalkeepers. I think De Gea is above that level.
You're asking Lee if he'd take De Gea?
Yeah.
Are you out of your mind? Of course, yeah.
Absolutely.
Martin ain't shit.
I mean, you know what? Maybe even I would have taken him. Maybe I would have.
Oh, that's nice of you.
Yeah.
So what a gentleman over there, Mr. Tottenham. So I guess the next topic is Chelsea beats Everton, and it's a great test. And to be a champion, you got to pass these type of tests, and you did your thing with Tuchel. How do you feel, Neil, about Chelsea's progress under your new coach? And I also think, before you answer the question, it's fucked up that you have so much Chelsea paraphernalia on the wall that you didn't have when your boy Lampard was coach. But all of a sudden,
I didn't know. Okay, I'm sorry.
Now
I was
reaching
for it.
Now you're more proud of being a Chelsea fan than when your boy Lampard.
It's just logistics, as Lampard himself would say, probably, just a matter of timing.
Mm-hmm.
So
I know. I like how Chelsea logistically removed Lampard from coaching their team.
I think this week was very critical because we had, after Tuchel came, we had a whole bunch of games which were winnable fixtures, which we've beaten in the first half, teams that we had beaten comfortably in the first half. And it was a very slow burn. Like we looked very flat for a lot of those games. Mm-hmm. And, we're not conceding, but we're not doing much either. And the Atletico game was similar, but we got that wonder goal. And, that's a very crucial away goal. But then this week, the two wins, Liverpool and Everton, were the first signs of, we're beating good opposition comfortably. And basically, I could see the progress now in the team, especially the Everton game, because this was the best attacking game under Tuchel by a countryman. We had few signs versus United versus Liverpool, but this was when everything kind of came together. And I feel like a great thing about that Tuchel string, which Lampard, even back when I was supporting him, backing him as the manager, I felt was that his squad management was a little binary at times. Some people would be in favor and some would not. And then it would be like the other way around. But it would not be like seamless. What Tuchel is doing, like last game versus Everton, we made like 5 changes. And I couldn't really tell which team was better than the other because they're both like all the replacements were performing at a pretty equal level. So like Mount and Kante are 2 best players this season, did not play. But we still had one of our best games of the season because Havertz had a great game. You know, Kovacic, the replacements had a great game. Zuma had a good game. Who else? Marcos Alonso came in. He had a good game. Got the, you know, the assist for the first goal, even though it's an own goal.
Jorginho?
Huh? No, Jorginho. Oh, yes, Jorginho.
Who you hate?
Yeah, like, I mean, here's the thing with Jorginho. I just feel like he's not the prototype holding the DM that I like. You know, if you're controlling the game, he is. And, you know, he can make those, you know, he can control the tempo from deep. I just feel certain games, you need somebody more, more tenacious than him in those roles. But yeah, I mean, everything is looking really good right now. We're barely conceding. I think we've conceded 2 goals in 10 games under Tuchel.
Yeah.
So far, and one of them was an own goal. So,
Rudiger, baby, Rudiger.
Yeah. Yeah, like I was saying, like, you know, after the Liverpool game, I'm even liking that this new WWE wrestler that we have. Like, he's been kicking people up and down, which he used to do in the past, but they all used to be fouls on the edge of Rudiger. Like, he would kick people at the edge of the box, and that'd be a free kick from which you'd concede. So, pretty much the same thing that he's doing. He's just doing it a little more sparkly right now. So that's been great. I think things look pretty good. The Everton game was the last game that I was like really, really worried about. And I feel now we should be pretty secure for top 4 because our next theoretically tough game is Arsenal Man City, which is in May. So we have my hope is by then we've like made it beyond mathematical computation, the spot in the top 4.
Let me ask you a really serious question. Who does that number 19 shirt fit behind you? That you could fit that shirt?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you think I'm too big or too small?
I think that shirt is small, but all right. Martin, what you got to say about Chelsea?
Mediums, yeah.
All right.
I mean, it's a completely different story since Thomas Tuchel became the manager. He completely changed the team. He gave the team 2 things: identity and discipline. Like a German discipline that all new moves sign. So they know exactly what to do. They know how to play. You don't create a lot of chances, but you create the right chances, and you play very good defensive schemes. Yeah, pretty much when we played you guys, we didn't do nothing in the entire game, except of last 5 minutes maybe. So there is a discipline. I think the players know what to do. The players know their place. There are some victims of it. Pulisic is the biggest one, I would say. He's the one who has to worry about getting his place back. But Havertz, listen, you know, Tuchel is German. He's German. So obviously he's going to play his own guy. And Havertz is rejuvenated. Kind of got
one
a little
game.
Bit of confidence.
He played one game.
Yeah. But you can tell that Tuchel likes him. You know, they're both German. And he knows that he will play probably. He knows that he will have have the trust of his own guy, right? Where Pulisic, I think he should worry a little bit, you know. But overall, I mean, there are always victims. If there is progress, there are victims, and he's one of the victims. But Chelsea has a chance, a real chance to finish second. They do.
What do you think, Lee? What do you think about this Chelsea bullshit?
I think it's funny that Neil said that Chelsea had like a run of real easy games when Tuchel took over, and that run of games included Tottenham.
It was an easy game.
It was our worst
performance of the season. I agree.
Yeah,
it was an easy game.
And it was like, oh, we haven't really been tested till we played Liverpool.
No, they weren't. Not in this game. No, it was a terrible game.
I agree with Neil and Martin.
I just want to point out, you know, one of the teams that have actually taken some points off Chelsea recently was us.
Yes,
the bogey team. But no, I think, I mean, I watched the game and like Everton have been in good form lately. They've got players like Richarlison, who's just been on fire. And yeah, Chelsea just, this every performance at the moment, they seem to get a little bit better each time. They seem to be understanding more and more what Tuchel's asking them to do. Like everyone said, like Havertz, his best game so far in a Chelsea shirt. Werner looked a bit more comfortable as well. And just, yeah, the whole team is looking stronger and stronger each week. So I think they're, I think they'll get top three. Where they'll finish within that order, I don't know. They could give you guys a challenge, but I think they'll probably pit Leicester for third and you guys second, I think.
So let me ask you a question. What did Havertz do? Ricochet a ball off a defender for a goal? And
no, he was one really game? Good.
And I guess he got the penalty. He earned the penalty, right?
He earned the penalty. He almost got, I mean, that goal, which they ruled it off for offside, I felt that was very marginal. It was a really good move. Like,
of course you would feel it's marginal.
He cushioned it and, you know, took a neat finish. And the partnership between Havertz and Callum Hudson-Odoi. And I think that's, Hudson-Odoi's form is the reason why Pulisic is kind of finding himself out of the reckoning. And Tuchel did this really weird thing in the press conference. He was asked about, you know, Pulisic is the only guy who hasn't started a league game under Tuchel.
Right.
And Tuchel is like, well, you know, it's my fault. It's just that, you know, I know so much about him. So I know the impact he can create in 20, 30 minutes off the bench. So that's why I'm not starting him. Well, he got him on at the 90th minute. So it's like he's doing this weird, you know, girlfriend-boyfriend thing, you know, when you're trying to break up, like, it's not you, it's me. And I mean, Pulisic should be a little worried, but again, you know, it's in his, he will get chances. I don't think any drastic decision is going to be taken over the summer. So as long as he can stay fit and get a, you know, run of games where he's available, when maybe others are not, you know, that's your window of opportunity. But like the form of folks like Havertz, Mount, Hudson-Odoi, and now if you can get like folks like Ziyech, Werner's been so patchy. Like I'm trying to get really worried about Werner because he's again missed two really good chances this year, this game. And yeah, I mean, like, how long do you wait before some of these go in? He's doing a lot of good things, like his attitude, his running, his his you know, presses are really, really good. But I mean, you know, you're on your bread and butter as somebody who scores goals. You have to at some point.
He had an assist the game before, right?
He scored a goal that was
the offside goal.
The offside goal.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But I think he'll come good though. I think it's just a patience thing. Like Neil said, he's doing almost everything right apart from the finish. So I think the goals will come.
Yeah.
Eventually, I think both him and Havertz will play well together. I think there will be a good duo moving forward.
Yeah, and I think Pulisic will get his chance. It's a whole squad. You need the depth. And especially after the Euros this year, like towards the end of the season, he'll get more of a chance, and especially the beginning of next season. And once all he has to do is cement himself. Or, you know, it's funny, man. There's always that one player sometimes on a team that whenever they play good, but the coach never starts them. Or it's like I hope they don't Sean Wright Phillips him.
Well, like, Ian, you don't forget one thing about Pulisic and Tuchel. You know, Tuchel was at Borussia Dortmund. Pulisic was at Borussia Dortmund.
I didn't forget that.
So sometimes things happen that we don't know about, and they have an impact, you know?
Yeah, but I didn't reject Neil's boyfriend-girlfriend analogy because I feel like maybe something is up. That sounds like an excuse, you know?
Yeah. But to be fair, Pulisic has had a very bad season so far.
But so is most of Chelsea. No, even though you
he's
guys,
had the worst of all of them.
Come on. I've seen Werner miss so many goals right in front of the net.
Okay, Werner was...
And Havertz. Come on, man. Come on, man.
Okay, but Werner and Havertz have still got... Like, Werner's got 10 goal contributions over 2,000 minutes. Pulisic's got one goal, one assist. He's almost reaching 1,000 minutes.
He started good, then he was injured, and then...
One goal, one assist in 1,000 minutes. That's just not good enough to be a starter.
But what has Havertz done? But Werner should have had more. Like, they were blatant goals.
I agree. I'm not saying Werner has had a good season.
He saved a goal
that
Gerrard scored. No, but all they do was Giroud scoring.
I'm not saying
by far, the most contributions Giroud. It's not even close. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Werner or Havertz have had good seasons.
What are you going to do with Giroud? Tell me. What are you going to do with Giroud?
If he wants to sign another 1-year contract, great. Otherwise, you know,
if I'm Giroud, I'm leaving. I mean, I proved them through the point. I'll just cash in somewhere else.
I think Chelsea's going to go in hard for Erling Haaland. So it's not going to be easy, but we are going to go hard.
So then what you do with Werner? Because he's your center forward.
Because we were trying to play two up front. A lot of games we played two up front, not these last two games. And Werner, if you look at how his, where he came up from at RB Leipzig, he did play off the shoulder of somebody in front of him. So we've tried to play Giroud.
Poulsen was a target man.
Yeah. But Poulsen. So if Werner is firing, then we might want to pair Haaland as a starting striker. And if Giroud goes, then Tammy is our backup there. So we have options. Haaland's going to be one of the hardest deals to pull off. But I feel like
he wants to go to England.
He had a really eventful game tonight.
I loved it. I loved it? Because he had that Diego Costa, like, absolute nuts moment with the Sevilla goalkeeper. And I'm like, I want this guy in my team. I want that cunt. Like, we've missed cunts in our team. It's been a while.
Yeah, he's got a spirit that does not exist in Chelsea right now. Or in a lot of teams all over the world. But before we get to Champions League, which was, man, it was great today.
It's amazing.
Liverpool getting beat by Fulham, and also Fulham sending a formal invitation to Newcastle and Brighton Hove to join the relegation battle. And said, hey, where you guys going? This is not over. Us three teams at the bottom, this is not set in stone. We need you here to make this exciting. We can't have a relegation battle where there's no battle. So you motherfuckers come back here and get in there. So
very much so.
Go, Martin.
Liverpool, I mean, you know, I spoke with different Liverpool fans. Everybody's on the same page. Without any defender on the team with all those defensive problems, you know, they're in a downslide. They pretty much gave up on the season. They stopped fighting. I think Roy Keane said it too, that they gave up on the season. And that's what it looks like. I think Champions League is the only option to get something out of the season, because at this point, I don't think if even short winning streak helps them, because they would have to play in Europa League. I don't think they want to do that. So they would rather stay where they are at the moment and just finish the season and forget about it.
Hmm. What do you think, Lee? What's the word in England on Liverpool and your opinion?
People can't really put their finger on it. I mean, obviously the injuries are there, but I mean, you should...
I'm sorry, Lee, let me just rephrase. How do you feel about your big brother, Liverpool?
Well, this is the problem. You know, they haven't bought anyone off us for a while. And
they actually gave you a player.
They stagnated.
You have two players you have from Liverpool, in Ings and Minamino.
That's it. Our production line stops and they stop. I think it goes beyond the injury excuse, because even with the injuries, like, they still have pretty much their midfield there, apart from Henderson at the moment, and their whole attack there. Alisson's still there. So Fulham at home is a game they should still be winning. I think he rotated a little bit because he had one eye on the Leipzig game. Trent was on the bench. Mane was on the bench. And he's looked stupid now, because I think it would have been better to...
And Firmino.
I think it would have been better to play the strongest team, beat Fulham, and then go into this game with some confidence. They've already got the 2-0 lead from the first leg as well. But now they're going into this game with no confidence. If Leipzig get the first goal, then it's on in that game as well. So if they go out of the Champions League, then really their season's is done, it's finished. So that could be interesting. But I mean, Fulham, credit to them. Fulham didn't, like, they didn't just go there and like fluke it. They actually created chances. They played well. They could have had a couple others if Madjer had been on target. And like you say, like, Brighton and Newcastle were in it now. And I almost kind of feel like Brighton have had such bad luck not closing out games. It's almost like they could be the ones who go down, even though I think Newcastle are a much worse team than Brighton. Brighton just seem to be having that, like, bad luck that would lead a team to get sort of sucked into that third place at the last minute or something.
I want to just add one thing.
No, you got to let Neil go first.
Okay.
And me.
All right. about Maja, but I'll tell later.
Yeah, yeah. Don't forget it.
Fulham played well, and in fact, Lee touched upon Brighton, right? I feel like Fulham and Brighton are two teams in the league who completely don't deserve where they are on the table, because I feel like they both played far better football than being pretty much in a relegation fight. And the fact that Liverpool started that game with so many changes, I think we don't even need to guess right now. I think it's pretty clear that they have kind of given up on the league and they're putting their eggs in the Champions League basket, which is a pretty high-risk basket to put your eggs in. But I feel they think the top four is gone. Do we really want to play Thursday night football by playing Europa League? Because history says that no team has ever competed for the league having while playing Thursday night football. There's now next season, there's the Europa Conference League, which takes the seventh place. There's a third European competition, and the seventh place guy, likely because of the way the cups work, is going to have to play. So they probably don't even want to face in the top seven. It's probably the one that you can win.
Congrats, Martin.
Yeah. You guys remember the Intertoto Cup in the 90s?
Yeah,
and stuff?
Yeah.
It's like the Caribou Cup for loser teams like Martin.
It's even worse because the Caribou Cup is probably analogous to the Europa League. So think of as the Caribou Cup to the Caribou Cup. this you're going to have teams that you don't even know exist. Mm-hmm. And maybe one of Liverpool or Tottenham.
We'll be fifth. I think we'll finish fifth, but we'll get to Tottenham.
Yeah, so... So they probably trying to finish even lower. I don't know how it works in a professional environment. I don't think you can go into games trying to, go easy. So, you kind of quote-unquote
tank it. All they have to do is keep doing what they're doing and they'll be fine and they won't finish seventh.
I mean, they don't have a single defender.
Martin, let me just jump in there. My Liverpool Fulham thoughts is, Liverpool is like a Ferrari that's 3 years old, that's a lemon. Like, he just, every week or midweek, Klopp goes out there and like, and when it does start, it sputters, it drives a few yards, and it shuts down, and you got to start it back. I don't know what's wrong, but it's wrong, and the shit ain't working. But I don't blame him for not playing a full team against Fulham, because the team he put out should have at least got some points, and they didn't. And listen, man, save your players, and you got to be professional. You got to be able to compartmentalize that. Yeah, you need a win to go play Europa, to play Champions League, but you're also going to play a team that you know you beat. And they beat them at Atletico, right?
Budapest? This is Leipzig,
It's Leipzig. So they beat them away. It's like you're like
they're going back to the same ground now as well.
They're back home, right?
No, they're playing this one. Yeah,
it's just Budapest.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it actually probably benefits them because they can't win at Anfield right now. So
yes,
right, exactly. So. I would like, listen, if I can't win the league, I'm going to win Champions League. And I didn't know that stat that Neil just mentioned. So it makes sense. And I remember when Liverpool beat up on Villa's under 13 team, like a few weeks ago. It didn't help them in the league, like after they won that game. So it's like, fuck beating Fulham. Go for Champions League. And as far as Fulham is concerned, Scott Parker is at least proven that he's a coach. He can ball. If you give him some money, he'll do the right thing. First of all, I like what Fulham did in the transfer window. Like, they learned their lessons from the last time they were up and they went right down. They spent all this money. Like, they started the season with what they had, with some new additions. But then by the transfer window, they bought some key additions that work. And if they can survive this, and just get some money and buy some forward. They have them and Brighton Hove. I want them and Brighton Hove to stay up because I like attractive football. you know, and they play some beautiful football without putting the ball in the back of the net. So I fucks with Scott Parker. And Martin, I don't
know. Best-dressed man in the Premier League. Best-dressed manager in the Premier League.
He looks like Robert Redford, but I don't think he's the best-dressed man. He's the littlest manager I've ever seen in my life. He's doll size.
Yeah, I've seen him live. And he played for Chelsea, actually. He was one of the Roman Abramovich first buys when Jose Mourinho became... No, he was actually Claudio Ranieri's, I think. Claudio Ranieri bought him.
Yeah.
He was a very, very good player. I mean, not very talented, but very good, hardworking player.
Mm.
And that's they bought him from Charlton, as I remember. He was one of the best players at Charlton, and he played for Chelsea. And I think he played for Fulham at the very end of his career. Yeah, for sure. But I'll tell you guys one thought that I had watching Fulham last week. It's almost 1 year anniversary of lockdown and pandemic and everything. And I remember exactly a year ago when the pandemic started, and Josh Maja became this internet sensation because of the Sunderland documentary, the second season, right? And it's like 1 year later, we're still in pandemic, and Josh Maja is scoring goals in the Premier League. And it's like almost after a year of pandemic, we don't know what's real, what's not anymore. You know, like the guy was the internet sensation from a documentary. Now he's a real striker scoring real goals for a real team. And yeah, I mean, it's funny that before pandemic, nobody heard of Josh Maja, nobody, except of some Sunderland fans, you know, because he was playing for a championship team. You know,
yeah, and then he went to, was it France?
Bordeaux,
right. So like, and he's on loan from Bordeaux, right?
Yeah, so only a very few people who knew who Josh Maja is, and then he becomes this internet sensation because of pandemic, and everybody's staying at home and watching the documentary. Mm-hmm. And now he's actually a real player. I mean, it's pretty
cool. Are you saying that Liverpool could solve their centre-back problems by signing Joe Exotic?
maybe, you know, like right so now, any centre-back.
It's almost a one-year anniversary. As soon as he gets out of jail, Liverpool limo will be waiting for him. So this next topic is Tottenham beats Crystal Palace 4-1. Bale scores two goals, and boy, does Real Madrid have a player on their hands.
Young kid
coming through on loan, baby. Yeah, Real Madrid. Don't worry about that failure of Hazard. Yeah, you get this new kid Bale that you loaned out to Tottenham and put him back in your lineup, and it's on fire time. So what's up, Martin? How you feel about Mourinho now?
I told you how I feel. I mean, I don't feel that good about Mourinho. I mean, I think he will still do the job result-wise, but I think he proved that he doesn't have the right strategy for this team. It seemed to be a logical choice to play him and Son and Kane at the same time from the moment he got to the club. Let's say he needs a couple of weeks to prepare physically, but I don't think he needed that much time. You know, it was for me kind of strange that in some of those games that we lost points, like against Fulham, the first game that we didn't get 3 points, there were some other games against Brighton that he doesn't play a guy like Bale. You know, like that was kind of puzzling, and fans were calling him out on that. Same with Dele Alli. Dele Alli came a week ago and played actually a very good game, and now he didn't play in that game. I would like to see Dele Alli, Son, Bale, and Kane, all four of them at the same time. You know, I think it would be interesting. Of course, there are some defensive issues, and when I see Doherty or Davis or Dyer near the starting lineup,
you have a problem with all your backs.
I did have a problem with Aurier for most of the time, but sometimes it's comparing to what's the lesser evil, you know? So I think Aurier is the lesser evil than Doherty. I mean, he has at least he has his moments.
What happened to Doherty? Because I know when you guys got him.
I don't know, man.
It's really highly rated.
Yeah, but, in the fantasy league, he was fantastic for Wolves.
But remember, sometimes Mourinho does that to players.
Maybe.
You know? Doherty is not the first player that Mourinho has Doherty. So
yeah, I know. I mean, he had the same issue with Luke Shaw at United. Luke Shaw was kind of looking
hesitant. And Mo Salah, you could just go through the
Salah was an unproven talent at the time.
But you don't like he gives up that motherfucker will if you don't,
I mean, he gave up on Dele Alli, and then I saw Dele Alli a week ago, who played, in my opinion, very well in that game. I'm like, is he really that bad?
Mourinho's a guy, if you don't sleep with him the first night, he won't ask you out on a second date.
I think actually he'll ask you for the second date, and then something wrong happens on the third date, and there are no dates, and then it's, you go for another date, you know, because Dele Alli was scoring like crazy in the first couple of games he played for Mourinho, and even this conversation in the documentary, he says some stuff, but it looks like they're on the same page, and then suddenly he stops even being on the bench for some of the games, and then he gets back and he plays a game and he plays very well. We score a goal after his play, which was an own goal, but technically he made the goal. And he didn't play again. Lucas Moura played. I would rather see Dele Alli. Dele Alli plays like the game before. I would rather see Dele Alli with Bale and Son.
Because Dele Alli didn't put out enough for Mourinho.
Yeah, because now, you know, as a defender, you have to, as a defensive strategy against Spurs, when they have all those four players, you have to make some choices. You know, either you double Son when he cuts inside, but then you leave Bale open, or you leave Dele Alli open, and you can't play one-on-one Kane, you know. So it would be interesting to see those four guys in the field at the same time. Probably that's not what Mourinho likes, because probably in some of those games will be high-scoring games, like 4-2, 4-3, 3-2. But I would like to see that. I want Tottenham to play offensive football, and we don't. We don't play up to our strengths.
Lee, what do you think? Since you're up at 5 in the morning, England time, of Spurs.
I think one thing that's worth remembering with Doherty is that he is an Arsenal fan. maybe he's just struggling. Maybe he's just struggling with having that badge on his chest every week. That's why he's not putting the performances in yet. Did you see his announcement video when he signed?
Oh, what did he say? What was it?
It was him like deleting one of his old tweets as an Arsenal fan.
Oh,
like,
really?
Slagging Spurs off. Yeah, that was like his announcement video on the Spurs Twitter.
Hilarious.
Was him looking at the tweet and deleting it and going to the camera like.
They should have done the same for Mourinho's announcement video to delete Mourinho deleting his interviews of saying that I'll never manage Tottenham.
But no, the game was good. I really enjoyed the Kane goal where the ball got set back to him outside the box. He just whipped it into that far corner. Just
fucking
such a
every goal,
such good technique. But yeah, all the goals in that game, even the Benteke goal was a fantastic header as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was fun to watch.
Yeah, Lee, what you think? Neil, my bad. The guy that looks nothing like Lee. What do you think?
It's one of those games which, if it happened a couple of months before, would have been really scary to see. Like, you got to deal with Harry Kane and Gareth Bale together for like half a season. That's really scary if you're looking at the top four race, top six race. I like how Harry Kane is completely cheating on Human Son with Gareth Bale. You can actually see in the huddle of this score, Son's trying to get Kane's attention. Kane's like, I got Bale.
Right.
So
they run in the opposite direction of Son to celebrate.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, that front three and that, even Lucas Moura for that matter is.
Yeah.
I know Martin probably wants Dele Alli to, and I probably want that too. Like, you know, see, I feel Ali is the better player in that, you know, just behind the front three, but
exactly.
Mora's doing a good job though.
Mora works harder. He works harder than Dele Alli. And that important in football, especially English football.
Especially to Jose Mourinho.
He has no numbers, man. He has no numbers really.
But I guess you're not. There's stuff that he does that Dele Alli wouldn't do. So when Dele Alli has no numbers, he has no numbers, period. But when Lucas Moura has no numbers, he has those numbers that you don't see.
Yeah, but Lucas Moura played a lot of games. Dele Alli barely plays. I mean, I for me, a Dele Alli in his good form is still a much better player for the Spurs, and especially because he knows how to play with Son and Kane, and I think he would learn how to play with Bale. I think that actually their games fit each other, but I just don't think that could work under Mourinho because, you know, it's we've seen what Pochettino did with PSG against Barca. You know, that's the type of football I'm like, I've seen it. I've seen it in my team, you know. I've seen that kind of football, and of course, it went south at the very end with Pochettino. But if we could get a coach that would take risks, and I'm sure that after a couple of more losses, at least Steam would give us one for next season. I would be happy. I would be happy with our team playing that kind of football, you know, that Southampton does at times.
The whole time I was thinking when you were talking is like, let Neil finish what he had to say.
No, I was just going to say that. I mean, so they are playing attacking football right now. Now, whether that's the whether that's the tactics or whether that's just the natural ability of having these superstar attacking players on the pitch together and their chemistry, which, you know, obviously they've worked on it for, they've had enough time now to work on it. You never know, but I feel like as long as Mourinho is happy with the defensive structure, like if you have a goal, if you have a game, even if you win that game, but you concede like two or three goals, he'll shut it down again. But till then, the Spurs are right now the biggest challenger to anybody who's currently in the top four.
Okay, all right, that's a nice compliment, Martin. I'm gonna say something, and then I'm gonna ask you, Martin, like, what do you think is gonna happen? So, like, you know, and I think I said this in the last 2 weeks. It's like your best players of your Spurs are attacking players, but Mourinho, when he got there, he's defensive minded. So he started the focus of the team on the players who are his worst players, which are his defensive players. But now with this offense kicking in gear, is he going to like do the right thing and make the team more offensive focused and take some chances to let in some goals and go for the wins? Do you think he's going to do that?
I mean, we won three games in a row, you know, so that's a good start. We just have to play our best defensive players and not really changing that anymore, you know?
But did Mourinho change anything from the other games that he lost?
Yeah, we played Bale, Son and Kane and Ali a game before, and then this time it was Moura, but it's better to play at least those three players that I mentioned together. You know,
Bale is the one that made everything change, is making the clock tick right now.
It's the fact that right now you have one goal scoring threat in Son on one side and second goal scoring threat on the right side and a guy in the middle. Yeah, that changes for sure, 100%. I would say that Dele Alli would be the fourth one if we put Dele Alli there with those three.
Have anybody here ever seen Bale? Not Bale, my bad. Kane was like basically a midfielder. He's like a false nine in this game. He was just like taking the ball from defenders on his team and making passes. He was so, and I was like, in the beginning of the game, or even I was like, he's not going to score anything. I said, let me see if this plan works. But not only did he, how does somebody play that deep and still get two goals? And what was it? Two assists? Like, that is fucking crazy. And that goal that he scored is, you know which goal I'm talking about because he scored more than one. But that shit was, that might be the goal of the year. That, like, it was like, you don't score from that angle on a regular basis. And there's certain goals that people can score. Like, that's the type, when you're on that side of the field, you usually use your left foot to curve it to that side of the net. Mm-hmm. He used his right foot. And so I got to give him props for that, but. You know, let's see if what Mourinho is going to do from now on.
It's crazy. Like, they have the three, like, if you look statistically, they have three of the best four attackers in the league this season. They should not be seventh. So, I mean, they can still make a run for it. I feel like their biggest problem right now is going to be that the team that they're closest to in the top four is us. And we are also on the upwards trajectory. If it was Leicester.
Don't forget about Leicester.
But Leicester is another 3 points ahead of us. So then you have like a, a 8-point gap with like.
Don't forget, They don't have Madison. They have a couple of major players.
They don't have Barnes either.
They don't have Barnes either, and they slipped last year. So, you know.
True. I feel like Ben Rogers is going to slip, but. The slip has to happen. Like the last game versus Brighton, which they looked like they were going to lose for the longest time, or at least draw, then they won it at the end. So if Leicester starts getting...
The great Graham Potter lost the game?
again, due to his players, you know, they played a great game. I felt they're better than Leicester.
Yeah, yeah. Grand Prime, so, man. They lost the game last minute.
So Leicester, like, a certain, they're just about doing enough. I agree. Like, you know, even I'm expecting them to drop. But, you know, it has to happen. They have the toughest set of fixtures among all these teams to competing for top four, like the remaining ones. So, yeah, maybe that's your window of opportunity.
They seem to just pull players out of nowhere, though. Like, this week, without, like, Madison and Barnes and people, they had a kid, Tavares.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Young Portuguese kid. Like, I hadn't seen him play much for them previously.
That was his first start.
He was everywhere.
Yeah.
He was making stuff happen. So they just seem to have, like, someone unknown that can just come in and fit a position every time.
It's like they got a cheat code. Like, Tavares would have scored if he had more experience in that game. So it's like, it's scary to see what that kid is going to do. Like, based on the progress of all the other players that you never heard of until last season and how good they're doing, and Tillemans and all these guys. And now they got a Tavares. Where the fuck you get a Tavares from? It's crazy. There's something I wanted to say. So, Martin, I like how, and it's not just you, but, you know, you guys like, yeah, we just got to beat, let's get Leicester's place. But you also have to pass Everton and West Ham to get to Leicester. And that like, these teams are not, West Ham is not fucking around. Like, Jesse Lingard is on one, bro.
Yeah, yeah. I think they'll actually finish top four, to be quite honest with you. And I think we'll finish fifth because it's just too much of a gap. I mean, if we beat Arsenal, maybe we'll get a momentum. But don't forget, we still play a cup final. We still play Europa League, which I think both of those competitions he wants to win. So I would say we'll probably finish fifth or sixth. I don't think we'll slip below sixth. I mean, we play better right now, and we have our players healthy, and I think we will finish either fifth or sixth. However, West Ham is very impressive, and David Moyes is doing a great job, you know, very underrated for years, you know, because he's done a good job at Everton, and he's now doing a good job at West Ham. Cresswell is playing very, very well. I think someone will buy him this summer. I think Cresswell will pay big bucks for this guy. And Lingard probably is winning himself a place on the English team for Euros.
I know, he scored again.
Although he missed the penalty technically and he scored the rebound, but yeah.
Yeah, it was funny because they let him take the penalty this time, because the last time he earned a penalty, he fought Declan Rice for it and Declan Rice took it. And then he apologized and congratulated Declan Rice. And this time it was like, go ahead, Lingard. And then he gets it saved. But then he's lucky he recovered that shit.
I just don't like the way he celebrates goals. You know, it's one of the most annoying ways of celebrating goals.
Yeah, yeah, you're right, 100%.
Just links.
Yeah, I don't understand why you're blowing a flute. This is ridiculous. It's fucking ridiculous. Why are you playing a recorder? What are you, in elementary school in England? Lee, sorry we took so long to get to you, but Lee's been on this podcast loss after loss after loss after loss. And then some of the losses weren't just losses. There were some losses. There was like three losses in that one loss. But now you come through wearing your proud shirt right after Lee and Southampton finally won a game and they beat bottom of the table, Sheffield United. How you feeling, man?
Needed that. I was actually more nervous for this game than some of the others, because I was like, we just seemed to, like I said, I said on the previous games, like, we put so much effort in, but nothing was happening in front of goal. We just weren't getting the goals, weren't getting the results. And then this game, I mean, Nathan Teller, the young kid, probably the best game he's had for us. He looks like he's starting to settle into first team football. He's got out of those under 23 habits of being able to just turn it on now and again. It was his best game for us. Obviously Ward-Prowse didn't fuck around with the penalty. He had a good game overall as well, just worked hard. And Shea Adams's goal was ridiculous. The technique to strike it the way he did was probably the second best goal of the weekend after Kane's. or maybe Shaw's as well, but yeah, I mean, it's just nice to see us get those points, and especially with Brighton losing and Newcastle only picking up a draw, it gives us, like, it stops us from getting sucked into that fight.
Right. It lets you turn down the invitation to join the relegation battle. I think you're safe, though.
Yeah.
I think you should be safe. You know, you had a lot of injuries.
And, you did the hard work at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
Got a whole bunch of points.
Yeah.
So did Spurs.
We need like 7 points from 11 games now to hit 40 points. So we should be fine. Although I am worried because we got City tomorrow night, or, well, tonight,
I know,
when people see this, or it might have already happened when people see this. But I think, like, United have like poked the beast there, and I think we'll get the angry backlash.
I think relegation's going to be about 35 points though this time.
Yeah.
35, so 36.
You're almost there. So you're almost there.
Yeah. So after the hiding to City, you know, you should be good. Martin, what do you think about Southampton and Lee finally winning a game?
I mean, Lee, I didn't check what's going on with Danny Ings. Is he like seriously injured or not?
Oh yeah.
No, they think a couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks maybe.
Oh, that could be a problem, man. That could be a problem. You know, that could be a problem.
Shea Adams,
you know, like,
baby.
Part of me likes you guys. I never had bad blood towards Southampton, but as they say, this business is pretty brutal and cruel. So eventual you guys slipping to Championship raises the chances of us hiring your coach. So
yes, yeah, so he's in love with your coach. So
just for that sake, I would like to see that happening. But overall, I think you guys will be fine. There are two teams that are going down for sure, right? And I think Brighton looks like the third team at this moment, because or Newcastle. I somehow think that Newcastle, when they get their players back, will pull it off. They have just too much talent, man. San Maximin, Wilson. How they can go down? I don't see Fulham going down with the players they have. You know, so I think Brighton is the, I would say, the number one contender to go down. And you guys.
So then you can get. Then you can get Graham Potter as your coach.
No. Graham Potter, I don't want. Maybe for assistant coach.
I think if you end up with Hasenhüttl, I think something's gone wrong at Tottenham, because it means that Nagelsmann looked at you guys and went, no. Because he's apparently your number one.
No, I just like his philosophy of with the players. Let's say we keep Bell and keep Ali. I mean, I think Hasenhüttl would use them better, you know?
I think Hasenhüttl is a good coach, yeah. But
he could do a good job at that level.
He can do a good job, but if Jose Mourinho finds himself replaced by Hasenhüttl, I'd be really worried about the mental health of Jose Mourinho. I don't think he can take it.
Yeah, I think,
like,
I think
his ego.
His
I don't
mental
think
health went down like 10 years ago. So
you'd have to have a cop watch on him.
Hilarious. Did you guys watch Champions League today?
Just before that,
go ahead.
I had one question for Lee about Minamino, because we're seeing the situation right now at Liverpool where they seem to not have the squad. They're like, Mane and Firmino have not scored or done anything in ages, but they just can't seem to be able to, you know, replace them because probably they're not happy with who they have in the squad. Do you think Minamino has done enough to show that he could have been a decent option?
Possibly, but I think it would mean they'd have to upset some other people. It's hard to tell sometimes whether a player is just good on loan at a smaller club, because he was there and he had chances and he never really did it. He played once really well, I think, against Palace when they hammered them 7-0.
Yeah,
he's got sometimes there. Yeah, sometimes a player can look better when they go on loan to a smaller club and they haven't got the pressure that, like, you're playing for Liverpool, you've got pressure on you at a different level than when you're playing for Southampton. And I think he's everything he's done for us has been great so far. I mean, the goal against Newcastle was ruthless. Against you guys, he was so composed when he got put through on goal. Yeah. Just sat people down on their asses and went, yeah, I'm just going to stick it in the other corner.
I got the photo.
So yeah, he's done really well, but it's, like I say, it's different. The pressure of playing for Liverpool, the people he can be competing with a place for. I mean, if all their players are on form, he doesn't play, does he? If all their big names are doing what they're meant to be doing. So I don't know.
All right.
It's a tough one. I mean, I'd like to keep him. Hopefully they don't want him.
It'll be the first player they sell to you guys.
Not the first one.
Like old and down the hill.
Danny Ings.
First for a few years. Yeah.
For a few years. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
So here's my issue, right? The Champions League match, Porto versus Juventus. Yes, Juventus went down to 10 men in the 54th minute. Porto went down 10 men, and Juventus should have handled their business, but they didn't, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but this goal, home and away thing, right? I feel like once you get to extra time, like your away goal shouldn't count twice. Like it's an away goal. That's when the field is neutral. And because if you played the first leg and you didn't go to extra time, you didn't have that extra time to score that that away goal. Why are we giving the traveling team an extra half an hour to score a goal? And then, you know what I mean? Like, I just don't think that's fair. Is it just me?
No, I think this rule was forever, and it created a lot of drama in the past, and I kind of like it because it promotes you know, certain strategy for playing the game. I like it. I don't want to get rid of it.
But I'm not talking about like during the regular 90 minutes. I'm talking about when the game is over and you have to play two extra 15 minutes. I don't think an away goal should count as an away goal. It should just count as a goal because it's an unfair advantage to the road team because the first game didn't have 30 extra minutes. So I just don't think like that's why Porto went through today because they scored a goal in extra time, but you had 30 extra minutes to score that away goal.
I kind of agree, but and Ian, I think what you're saying has already been tried in the League Cup, in the Carabao Cup. I know they got rid of home and away this season, but I think last season this was part of the rules where if it goes to extra time, the goals don't count. The away goal doesn't count.
Yeah.
So it's fair enough, but I mean, the other way to think about it is that the home team, I mean, we don't have fans now, but if they did, the home team gets to play 30 extra minutes with their fans backing them, which the other team never got to do.
Yeah, I mean, that is a good point, but it's like you get two goals, you just get more time. You know, but I mean, you know, kudos to Porto, man. They were a man down.
It's like anything to not get to penalties. I guess that's what they're trying to achieve here.
That's because penalties these days with VAR, penalty shootouts can take forever. To be like, oh no, the goalkeeper was half a centimeter off the line. We need to retake this one. Yeah.
but Lee, you just reminded me of my point because if it went to penalty shootout, the Porto penalties wouldn't have counted as two goals. You feel me? So why is this extra time? Like you're trying to end the game, right? And have a conclusion. So if in extra time, if in penalties, the goals don't count as two, why is it count as two in extra time? Even though I take it, you made a good point, but I just don't think it's fair.
I personally like it. It's been that way, for a long time. I know that some Polish teams, that's how they advanced to the next round when I was a kid, and I kind of like it because it gives you more drama. But the one thing I would change in football is the VAR thing, but we discussed that's the one thing that I don't think belongs to football the way it is right now structured, that they have to make corrections either, to make the whole process more fair and more transparent. So that's the one thing that I don't think it's that I would say my priority would be to change that. But about the game itself, I'm going to say this, Cristiano Ronaldo is doing great in terms of his stats, but it's the third year he's with Juventus that ends with short of Champions League aspirations. So,
well, if Cristiano Ronaldo wants to go further in the Champions League, he's got to make a better wall. That's number one. That was a terrible wall. And
he can't even blame anybody else this time.
I mean,
it was literally him.
Yeah, yeah. McKennie might take some of the blame because he fouled the guy, but that was you're a wall. Just cover your balls and close your eyes and stand there and then open them after. But you can't move, man.
I think Chesney's still got to save that shot, though, for me.
But you know what?
I know he saw it a little bit late, but I think he's got to it. His hands got to be stronger there.
Chesney's mediocre, man. You can't. You got that goalkeeper like Chesney. Listen, I ain't got nothing against Chesney, but he's been passed around a lot, and you don't get passed around a lot.
No, he wasn't passed around a lot.
Wasn't he at Arsenal?
He was at Arsenal. Yeah. Then he was at Roma, and then Juventus for 15 years of career. It's not being passed around.
You sure that's the only amount of teams he's been on?
Yeah, I mean, as a kid, he was loaned to Brentford as a 19-year-old. But other than that, no, that's it.
Let me ask you, because wasn't he a success at Arsenal?
Yeah.
Was he?
He became first-team goalkeeper when he was like 20 years old.
For how long?
For 4 years, probably, something like that.
That's not a success. Why are they getting rid of you after 4 years, you're an Arsenal goalkeeper?
You've got to remember, Martin always has a slight bias on these sort of players.
I mean, here's the thing with Szczesny, because I know the family very well. I told you, I work with his dad. We work together.
Oh, so this is some Polish bias. That's what you mean, Lee.
So one of the last newspapers I worked for in Poland in 2005, when I was still, you know, full-time sports writer. So I worked for this daily newspaper, and his father, who was a former goalkeeper, was my photographer. So I was the main reporter. He was the main photographer. So we were driving. He was spending a lot of time in the car, driving to games, and he was taking photos. I was writing stories, right? So so that was the time when his son went on trial to Arsenal as a 15-year-old kid, and I remember he came to the office, and he was already pretty tall, and he was extremely shy. Very, very, very shy, very, like, you know, insecure. But then we talked for the first time. Then I kind of stopped doing the sports writing thing. I came to America, and he started playing. And I remember the thing about his father, and they don't get along at all. Mm. But he's got the same thing as his father. You know, they're both super highly intelligent. Mm. They have a lot of interest outside of the football field, and they have mad skill. I mean, he's got.
So that's why he's just an average goalkeeper.
He's got mad skills as a goalkeeper. His talent is to the roof. Every guy in the world who worked with him can tell that his talent, his abilities are fantastic.
Mark, did you hear what Lee said about that goal today?
He has a problem with concentration. You know, he has a problem with his anxious personality. You know, he has a problem to focus on the game.
So yeah, but ADD goalkeeper makes you an average goalkeeper. Like, listen, I'm not saying Chesney's a bad goalkeeper. I'm saying that it does not surprise me, based on what I've seen on him his whole career, that goal went in today. And that's all I'm saying.
Yeah. He filled in the Buffon's boots, and you know, decently though over the last few years.
Yeah, I mean,
really, because they're not even going to win the league. They just got knocked out by Porto.
Yeah, but you can't blame it on Szczesny that they're not going to win the league.
Who's to blame? Pirlo?
Yeah, of course. You know, with the team he has, sure.
Dave Grohl on the touchline. He's probably going to get sacked now. I don't know.
He's like the same situation as Lampard. Not experienced enough to do, like.
Yeah.
It's like a new trend in football that you give those important jobs to guys who never coached before. And listen, it's not that easy, you know, to make a transition.
Yeah, because you're going up against, you're coaching against nerds, like ex-players that didn't have successful careers that went into coaching, like Nagelsmann. And I don't know if, was Tuchel a player?
He was, but not to a great level.
So these guys are like, all right, I love football. I'm staying in this. I'm going to learn this game. I'm going to be on the sidelines when I couldn't be on the field. And Pirlo needs to get his nerd up before he can.
Like Klopp. Klopp was not even a player.
Why was
he? He was a journalist. He was a sports journalist.
Klopp played in the second division.
Yeah, but come on, man.
Go ahead, Lee.
There's a thing in Italy when the managers take the UEFA Pro license, just part of the steps. So there's lower levels, and there's UEFA B, which is the level I'm qualified at, and there's UEFA A, and then UEFA Pro. And when they take the pro license in Italy, they have a thesis. It's almost like doing a master's degree kind of thing. and all of the theses are saved by the Italian FA, and some people gain access to them and translate them. And I've read Perlo's thesis. And it's actually quite interesting. The guy has like a really intelligent coaching mind. It's maybe just a lack of experience, but his theoretical knowledge of the game is actually, it's pretty bang on.
Like, guys, look, Boniek, Maradona, you know, like we can name great, great players who are really bad coaches, right? Really
but you
bad.
Can name great players who are great coaches.
Not Zidane, that many.
Pep, okay. Koeman.
I mean, Pep was a very good player, but I wouldn't call him a great player. He wasn't a great player.
I'll give you that.
Player. Koeman was a very good player too, but not a great player.
I don't know. He's pretty
Antonio
good.
Antonio Conte.
Koeman scored a winner in a European Cup.
He did, and he's remembered for that. He's remembered for that. I mean, he wasn't like a great player. It was right.
I mean, you look at the
Boston and Hulit were great players.
But you look at the top three coaches in the last. You know, last 15, 20 years, Klopp, Ancelotti, Guardiola, Mourinho, right?
Ancelotti was a good player.
Ancelotti and Guardiola have won European Cups.
On one of the greatest teams of all time, but he was only a sub on this team. Yeah.
So he wasn't a great player?
He was a very good player, but not a great player.
Yeah, that's what I mean, though. So
he was a sub. I remember that Milan team very, very well. He was a sub for Van Basten. Marco Simone was even ahead of him.
It was Marcus Van Basten.
and Van Basten wasn't a great coach. And Hulit wasn't a great coach. You know, Rijkaard was okay coach, you know. But listen.
Rijkaard laid the foundation for...
Yeah, you know, and he does not get props for that shit. I always fight for Rijkaard, man.
But Van Basten wasn't a great coach. Come on.
But there's people Hulit. I can't remember that were great. Like, Cruyff developed an entire football system that the whole world is using.
Yes. Yeah. That's an example. That's an example of guy who did it both. Yeah, 100%.
All right. So that was a Juventus-Porto game.
Harlem. Lothar Matthäus. Terrible coach.
All right. Haaland sends their fake Atletico... send Sevilla and their fake Atletico Madrid stripes home. What do you think of Haaland's performance today in the Champions League, y'all?
It was eventful, wasn't it? I mean, the I think Neil touched upon it earlier that he was a bit of a bastard on the second penalty or the retake after he had the first one saved when the keeper was off the line and the keeper celebrated a bit. So when Haaland stuck the retake in, he's gone and given the celebration to the keeper, and then all the Sevilla players wanted to fight him, and it was
what did they run up to him and then realize how tall he is, and then
get the entire team then you're talking
who attacks Bam Bam, like,
well, the best thing was it was Dortmund players that were beholding the other Sevilla players back, like, you don't want this.
We tried that in the training session. It didn't end well for us. You don't want it.
Yeah, did you see Sergio Ramos bounce off Haaland in a game in the Champions League? Come on, man, get out of here.
Yeah, so, kid's a monster.
Yeah, kid's a monster. He's Bam Bam, literally. Like, I just like his energy, his spirit. He loves the game the way his teammates love him. I feel like I was watching the game, right? But I couldn't really watch the game. So they gave a penalty, right? But in order to give the penalty... In order to give the penalty, they had to go back in the footage to give the penalty and take away a goal. Exactly. And take away a goal that he did score to give him the penalty, because they were looking at, because I feel like they felt like that was a foul against the defender. I don't think that was a foul. So they said, let's go back to the penalty and give him something. But they should have just said that wasn't a foul against the defender. The defender tried to put his body on him, bounced off like it was two magnets being pushed up against each other, flew the other way, and then just the way he put the ball in the net. Like, it's just like, how the fuck do you do that shit? And I was watching an interview with a Dortmund journalist, and they were talking about Lewandowski compared to Haaland at the same age, and Haaland is past Lewandowski.
I think Haaland is past even Messi and Ronaldo at this age in terms because he's gotten to 20 Champions League goals.
I think he's past.
Yeah, but come on.
I think he's past. What about Ronaldo at this age? But I don't think he's past Messi at this age.
What about Mbappe then? Mbappe passed everybody at his age, you know.
Think so?
They're two different types of players for me as well. Like,
I mean, he won everything. The guy can retire and he'll be happy ever after.
Hasn't won a Champions League.
If he retires, he's Dave Chappelle of football.
Exactly. So he'll come back 10 years later and still win the title.
Still be fast. What did you think of the Dortmund game today, Marno? You didn't get a chance to check it out.
I didn't get a chance to check it out yet, no.
Anything to say on it, Neil?
No, but I'm going to say one thing about Lewandowski that you mentioned, because it's very important. He scored.
And because you're Polish.
But also it's important. He scored three goals against Dortmund, right? Mm-hmm. So he's got 31 goals. One of the biggest, if not the greatest record in the history of club football is 40 goals Gerd Müller scored in one Bundesliga season 40 years ago. And 50 years ago almost. And Lewandowski needs to score 9 goals in the last 10 games. 9 goals in the last 10 games to break that, to even that record. And he needs to score a goal per game, which is very doable for him to beat that record.
Listen, yeah. Martin, as you're talking, I just keep looking at your earbuds, and it looks like you're laying on your hospital bed getting air through your...
I might when Lewandowski beats the record, I might, you know, end up in the hospital.
He has all the incentive too, because he might again be in the running for the Ballon d'Or.
Absolutely, they win the season. Sure.
Yeah.
All right.
Even if they don't win the Champions League, if they win the league, and this guy finishes on 40 goals, yeah, he's going to be in that in the running for that.
Last and definitely least, Arsenal versus Burnley. 1-1. And my thing on the, you know, we've had Arsenal fans on here before or Arsenal supporters, and they get upset about Arsenal playing out the back. And Arsenal playing out the back made them score a goal. Pretty much the closest thing to an own goal that wasn't an own goal this week. But also, Arsenal playing out the back got them the lead of the game. So I don't have a problem with Arsenal playing out the back. It's not because I'm not an Arsenal fan. It's just because I think the whole team is a work in progress. And you have to work on all the things you need to work on to gain progress. Like, there's going to be a big player change if they keep Arteta. Or whether they're not on, they keep Arteta, they're going to be a big player change. But if they keep Arteta, that team that they're going to have is going to have to learn how to play out the back. So I don't have a problem with it. Yeah, they suck at it, but they're supposed to suck at it, because this is not the team that Arsenal's going to have that's going to win them the title. They have some of the players, but it's not all the players. But some of the Arsenal fans on Arsenal TV was again talking about the refereeing, and some of them feel like, again, it's some agenda.
Sounds like the guy who was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, right?
But this time it was Big Robbie, the guy from Arsenal TV.
Yeah.
What are you hearing out there, Lee?
Burnley should have had a penalty. Vidra was about to take a shot in the box, and then he got clipped by a defender when he was about to probably score. So... It goes both ways. But on the playing out thing, I think you're right. Like, if you want to play, like, for me, playing out from the back is risk versus reward. And sometimes you get the reward, like they did on the goal. Sometimes you get the risk, which goes wrong, which is what happened on the Burnley goal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it was just poor decision making from Xhaka.
And the goalkeeper.
Yeah, I think Xhaka could have dealt with it better. He didn't need to play the pass there. There were other options. It was a poor first touch and then a poor pass decision, but that happens. Like, if you were trying to play that sort of football, you need to break some eggs to make the omelet. It's going to happen.
I just have a vision, you know, I just have a vision that I can foresee the future. A lot of complaining from Arsenal after the next weekend, a lot of complaining.
who do they play? You? Is it the dark? So what are your feelings about that, bro?
Good feelings.
Good feelings. But this could be some typical Mourinho shit, bro, where you just how many did you win in a row? Three?
Yeah, three. But I think Arsenal, I mean, it's a good fit for Mourinho's tactics. Actually, we did that in the previous game against Arsenal, and I think it will work again. Also, Arsenal it's a weird team that goes on streaks. You know, they either go on winning streaks or non-winning streaks. So it looks like
so the Spurs.
No, we're just bad for 2 months, like very bad.
That sounds like a streak.
Yeah, but you know, but with Arsenal, it's
and you're
like
good for 2 months before that.
No, we were good for the early part of the season. Then we had just very bad period of
streak.
Like, it was just 2 months. With Arsenal, it's like three games up. No, but with Arsenal, mm-hmm. it's three games up, three games down, three games up, three games down, three games up, three games down. It's that's more of a streak team.
Yeah, how do you know they ain't gonna start streaking on your ass this weekend?
I don't know, but I don't think so.
All right.
You're not worried about Saka or Aubameyang?
About Saka a little bit. About Saka a little bit. Not about Aubameyang that much. About
William?
Saka, he's a good player. Yeah, sure. Very worried about William. Yeah. I'm worried.
William had an assisted last this week.
Yeah, so then you're safe for another 12 months.
It's hilarious. Anybody else? Let's just wrap it up. Lee, what's your closings?
Just, I hope we don't get beat too bad by City. I hope we can have like a valiant loss. I'm not expecting even a draw there. If we can keep it down to like, you know, three or four, I'll be happy.
All right. Neil, what you got?
We face Leeds, but more importantly, we have Atletico in the Champions League next week, midweek. And it's a very crucial game for us because Chelsea has not won a single knockout round in the Champions League for 7 years, which is kind of unbelievable because the previous 10 years, we were reaching, I think, semi-final almost every other year. So it's a very, we have the advantage now. We have a 1-0 advantage. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes playing the home game last could be a disadvantage because similar to what you're saying about the extra time and stuff, right? So, so they know even if we get a goal, they can just, you know, get one goal and then be lucky towards the end. And then that goal will count more because then they would have had two away goals.
Yeah, you just get them to overtime. Let's play defensive, get to the overtime and then start attacking in overtime.
Exactly. So we need
just
to...
That's the same way people defend until the penalty shootout.
Yeah, and we're going to be without Mount and Jorginho, who are on yellow cards. They're suspended because of accumulation of yellow cards. So, therefore, the game we played versus Everton, where Havertz kind of played in that Mount role, and you know, Kovacic played with Jorginho. It's going to be important. This rotation is really going to start helping us now, I feel. And the squad depth is looking good. So
would it be Kovacic and Kante in the midfield?
Yeah, I don't really like that because it just intuitively doesn't make sense because both like to move. Ideally, in that double six pivot, you want one guy who's comfortable, you know, staying put, and the other guy moving. That's why Jorginho Kante or Jorginho Kovacic kind of works. But Kante Kovacic, even though they're individually really good players, that combination sometimes has landed us into trouble. But they did well against was it Liverpool? Yeah, I keep forgetting because they've changed the combinations so much, like with the way the rotation's been happening. Yeah.
All right. And Martin, you went, right?
Here is the thing. You know, we play a club that has a
definition. Feel like you're going twice. Go ahead.
We play in a club that has a definition in English football, a Mickey Mouse club. So we're going to win.
Mickey Mouse, who was the last two teams out of you guys to win any titles, any leagues?
Just stay on your team, you know. Thank you for Gareth Bale.
You guys are known
there. Thank you for giving him good football education as a junior. You know, I appreciate that. And he will make a good use of it this weekend, you know, his Southampton-based skills.
The player that Liverpool missed.
Martin, question for you, because this is something I think came up in the last podcast. Would you, because if you either win the Carabao Cup or finish top four, I think Mourinho is going to be carried on. Like, you're not going to sack Mourinho. So would you rather have that and keep Mourinho for another few seasons, or take the hit this time and move on to the manager that you like, maybe Nagelsmann, maybe Hasan Hüttl?
Well, if he wins trophies, you know, I'm not going to say lose trophies and get rid of the manager, because that way you can keep hiring people and get rid of them without getting any trophies, you know. So I always take a trophy first, sure.
All right.
Even if it's the Carabao Cup?
Yeah, of course. It's the Carabao Cup. It's a cup. You know, like, remember last when Man U won the cup, he was talking about it for 3 podcasts.
Let me tell you something, man. Let me tell you something, man. That's cute, Martin. Martin will steal a cup from 7-Eleven. Okay. That's what a Tottenham fan will just take any cup. They'll take a styrofoam cup. Okay.
I take the cup. 100% I take the cup. Sure.
All I got to say is, listen, a lot of Man U fans, like, I love the United stand. I listen to it and watch it all the time. But what's his name? His name's evades.
Mark Goldbridge.
Mark
Goldbridge.
Goldbridge. Love you. But he's always shitting on McTominay, Mick, and Fred. Because, yeah, the passing ain't the greatest all the time. But listen, we don't beat City without them. I think, like, we are so hard on McTominay. And we just ignore his development and what he's going to be and his potential and what he gives you. And he's actually passing a lot and progressing up the field. And he's kind of in a cage because he's following instructions. But I just need United fans to believe in McTominay more. And I need United fans to give Fred props. Yeah, he lost the ball a lot against Man City, but what midfielder in a battle like that wouldn't lose balls and make bad passes against that City press? But he also made City cough up the ball. He made De Bruyne cough up the ball more times than I've ever seen De Bruyne cough up the ball in a season in one game. So it's like, hey, man, we're second. Stop tripping. It's so weird, like, when they do the player ratings, like, the last few weeks on the United stands, and then he does his, and then the fans do theirs, and it's normally around the same. And we'll have a 0-0 draw or a 1-1 draw. But mostly, like, the last few weeks, we haven't scored any goals, but we haven't lost any games. That means we've had clean sheets. But the fans are so pissed that we didn't win that the player ratings for, like, Wan-Bissaka will be, like, for this game, it was 5. Let me ask you a question. Because he didn't go forward and create chances. Like, he's a defender, right? He's a defender. He's playing Man City, and we had a clean sheet. How the fuck is his player rating 5? He's a defender. He had to defend against De Bruyne, Gundogan, Foden, Sterling. Who else am I missing? Gabriel Jesus. Yeah. And they didn't score. How the fuck is Wan-Bissaka's player rating 5 and he's a defender? It's fine, he didn't score, like, sure, but they didn't score, and his job is defending, not attacking. Yeah, we'd like him to attack more, but I just think sometimes fans they just judge very emotionally. There should never be any 0-0 game where the defenders get low ratings. They did their job. The Maguire, Lindelof did their jobs. They should get high ratings because they're defenders. And I know soccer is scoring biased, you know, it's scoring and assist bias. But when people are doing their jobs, you got to give them their ratings that applies to their job. So that's my thing, you know. And a midfielder also is supposed to break up the opposition's attack. And Man City has a vicious attack, and McTominay and Fred broke that shit up for 90 minutes. It's not all about passing. It's about stopping too. So let's just look at that. Thank you all for being on here. You did a great job. Martin, congratulations on you know, the win. And Neil, congratulations. Lee, sorry about tomorrow. Aaron Brungard, thank you for hooking us up, producer-wise. And, yo, we'll see y'all next week. Have a good time. Be safe, y'all. One love.